Hi, this is Alex. You might know my mom, Heather, from Shine.fm. This is the Shine.fm Momcast. Take it away.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the Momcast today. I'm Heather Erb, and I have a friend of mine. I'd call you a friend. We've known each other for quite a while. Cindy Ritchie, introduce yourself to our listeners.
It's so great to be here with Heather. My name is Cynthia Ritchie, and I grew up in Mason, Michigan, and I am currently serving Christ and my community here at Mason First Church of the Nazarene.
You're married?
I am for 34 years.
Oh, awesome. Yes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And we were just talking about it off microphone, but you have two dogs.
I do. And they're my fur babies.
Yes. Well, you and I have known each other for a few years. We've worked together a little bit because you guys have been a huge partner of ours here in Lansing for our Shine.fm signal here. But I got an opportunity, I think it was maybe just over a year ago or so, where I got to hear part of your story. And of course, this is what we love to do on the Momcast, is to share our listeners' stories and people's stories that may just be a point of connection for us. And so why don't you tell me about the day that you found out that you had cancer?
Wow, that's a pretty tough day to start with, Heather.
Sorry. Well, if you want to go back a little further,
sure.
You can, but I want to start at least with that and share your journey.
Absolutely. Tom and I were married in 85, and we moved to West Palm Beach, Florida, 3 months after that. And we had been in Florida for several years. At the age of 34, I had started to become very tired. I had some random symptoms that no doctor could seem to isolate to one specific cause. Anything from allergies to various ideas that he had as to why I was having specific symptoms. I itched terribly, and my neck had swollen, sort of like a football player, in the sense that it was not its normal size.
Okay.
And then I was extremely tired. And at 34, you should be full of energy.
Right.
And Tom and I were both very active down in West Palm Beach, Florida, with our one dog at the time, and, you know, rollerblading, playing racquetball and basketball. And suddenly I could barely get out of bed to go to work in the morning.
Mm.
And after a year of visiting various doctors through an HMO system down in Florida that I belonged to for my health care, I then was going to work one day, and I reached for the car door, and I collapsed out of exhaustion, and also I couldn't breathe.
Mm.
And apparently, learning from the doctors what had happened, my lung had collapsed because the cavity where your lungs sit, they kind of float within your body.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have cancer, fluid will build up in that cavity, and it literally crushes the lung or makes it collapse.
Mm.
So by the time my husband and I had gotten to the ER and they ran me through a machine to determine what was going on, they saw all of the cancer that was within my torso.
Mm-hmm.
And they immediately contacted a doctor,
mm-hmm,
to get me into the hospital for more testing. Then they ran me through a gallium scan that it's like a nuclear test where they inject you full of a dye and run you through to determine it will attach itself to cancer cells.
Mm.
So when you then go through the machine, it will show the cancer where it is in your body. And mine was from head to toe. It was systemic because it was stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Wow.
And it had started to shut down my organs, my kidneys, and of course my lung had collapsed.
Mm.
So I was in the very end stages. A doctor came in to talk with Tom and I, and when he used the word Hodgkin's, I immediately thought it was something like, you've got the flu. And my husband immediately related that to cancer.
Mm.
I said, well, is there a cure for this? Is there a shot? What's wrong? And my husband just hung his head. And the doctor said, no, it's cancer. And I said, no, not cancer. And Tom was hanging his head. And I said, cancer? And Tom just shook his head. And by then, tears started to stream down his face.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the day we received the bad news. And on that day, Actually, that day was an outpatient day for me while they were still running tests. We immediately called our pastor down in West Palm Beach, Florida, Royce Wilkerson, and we belonged to a very small church in West Palm Beach. It was a congregation of maybe 100 on a good Sunday. Mm-hmm. When Tom made that call to Pastor Wilkerson, he immediately had called 12 leaders of our church, the folks who we did life with. And I can tell you that within that group of people, we had folks who were CEOs of companies. George Woody was the CEO of a electric company down there. It's like our Consumers Energy. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of it in Florida. And we had folks who were on the end of a shovel who were ditch diggers. Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying is those 12 people, when they got the call from our pastor, they dropped what they were doing, whether it was in a boardroom or outside digging a ditch. And they came to our church. And when Tom and I arrived, those 12 people started streaming in one by one.
Wow.
And for young people of 34, that was so incredibly powerful because they weren't in their 20s, just in their 20s or our age. Most of our friends were in their 70s and 80s. These folks were of every age, every walk of life. They came in and they surrounded Tom and I. Mm. And at an altar of prayer, we all bowed our heads, and they immediately began to pray for healing. In James chapter 5, we're commanded that when we are ill or sick, to go to the leaders of our church. And Tom and I, having been raised in this very Nazarene church, that was ingrained in us to do, because at 34, we had not faced any major crises in our life yet.
Right.
And so while I was still whirling with the process that we were going to have to go through and what we had been told, Tom immediately went, you know, he did what he was trained to do. And all of those people who loved us in our church family, they did what they were trained to do. And they held us. And they prayed like I have never heard prayer. It was so powerful. And I knew I had a journey to go through, but I also knew that I had a powerful church that was there with me to walk with me through it all. Yeah.
So what treatment, what did happen then? Like, what's the process that you went through? How long did you battle it? Because clearly you beat it because you're still here. Yeah. And it's not 1985 anymore, 1990. So what's the next step? Like, what was your journey? How did the treatment go?
So Tom and I were admitted in, or I was admitted into the hospital. And as my organs were shutting down, I did not have a lot of, they give you painkillers that wipe you out. And they gave me morphine. And in order for me to do that, I had to obviously give all of my decision-making rights over to my husband. Now, by then, my husband had already called my parents who were up here in Michigan and his parents who were up here in Michigan and told them what was happening. And they dropped what they were doing, trying to get down to Florida to be with us.
Right.
But Tom had to make some really tough decisions. The visit that we received from the doctors in the hospital was this. One, you have some surgeries and some treatment. You would have treatment that would probably end your life because you were afraid to put you under anesthesia. The next visit that we received was the doctors telling my husband that it was way too risky because my organs had begun shutting down and that he had two choices. He could either leave me in the hospital and hospice would care for me and keep me comfortable until my life ended, or I could go home and hospice could visit our home in West Palm Beach, Florida, and that they could allow me to pass in my own home. That news was shared with Tom without me being cognizant or aware.
Oh, wow.
They had me resting at that point. And then there was a young oncologist. He's probably not very young anymore. His name was Neil Friedman, and he was from Chicago area, and he had just moved to West Palm Beach, Florida, and he was a very devout Jewish man. And he came in, and he said to Tom, "I have a proposal for you. If your wife is going to pass on, we have a trial drug that I think could work for her." And Tom was listening, and he said, "But in order for us to do this trial, we would need to know whether we need you to answer two questions for us. One, is she a fighter? And two, does she have a faith or belief?" And Tom answered yes to both of those.
Wow.
I do remember when Dr. Friedman walked into my room. Next to my bed is this specific Bible, Heather, and as you can see,
oh, wow. Yeah.
It's taped together with duct tape, and it's barely hanging together. This was given to me when I graduated here at Mason First Church of the Nazarene,
okay.
And it was the Bible that I'd always used and always read from, and I remember him looking at it and seeing the duct tape hanging off the edge of it when Tom said, "Yes, she has a faith." Obviously, she's probably maybe read a couple of those verses.
Just a couple, yeah.
Yeah. And with those two answers, they began a treatment. And each time as they put me under to put a port into my shoulder in order to administer the chemo, they prepared Tom and I both that I may not come out of the anesthesia because of the state of my health. And so each time when I came out of it and I was awake, I was very happy that, you know, here I get to live another day.
Right.
They began the chemo. It was something called ABVD. And they still use that drug regimen today because it had become it was much more effective than what oncologists were using prior to that. They were just trying to sustain my life, just trying to give me a couple more months or weeks or days. The cool thing was my oncologist would often come to the room in the morning and he would pray in my room.
Wow.
Not only that, but when my mother and father and mother and father-in-law had got the word out, I had notes coming from churches all over the United States because Tom's brothers lived in Texas. And I had, you know, we had family all over that had scattered across the United States, and their churches were all praying for us during this time. So while I believe that this trial drug was a very powerful trial drug, I also know that the power of prayer was pretty amazing too. Mm-hmm. So I was in the hospital for several weeks before they could allow me to go home and then come back for treatment. So after 4 weeks or so, it was really interesting too, because even the insurance company came to my room to determine whether I was worth the investment. Let's put it that way. Yes, because they didn't want to spend a lot of money from the insurance company if I was not going to survive.
Wow.
So they made the decision that they would pay for the treatment. And after 4 weeks or so, I was allowed to go home and then come back every other week for, I think it was 4 or 5 hours, I would sit in the chemo chair while they would hook the port in my shoulder and administer all the chemotherapy. And my husband was, at that time, was the Family Leave Act was coming into play.
Okay. Yeah.
So Tom was able, he was at that time he was working for the city of West Palm Beach, and he was allowed to take a day just to be with me while I had chemo. And he had to sometimes carry me almost into the hospital room so that I could get the chemotherapy. And that's when the treatment had begun. And my parents came down. My mom and dad left everything behind, got into their camper, and drove down to West Palm Beach. And my mom and dad had made meals for us because I couldn't cook.
Right.
I was pretty much throwing up for a good solid two or 3 days after each chemotherapy session. So from there, I had 6 months. And at the end of 6 months, I had another test. And when they ran me through the test, what was just meant to extend my life for a few months or days, they couldn't find any cancer.
Wow.
That was May 3rd. Dr. Friedman called me and said, Cindy,
Wow.
We're cancer free.
Wow. That's so amazing.
And for me, you know, I looked back and I thought that journey, those 6 months, if you were to have asked me, if someone told you that you were going to have cancer at 34, would you have, what would you have done? Of course, you would run the opposite direction. You'd be terrified. You would say, no, I don't. But having gone through it and looking back, I think to myself, I learned so many things because of it that changed the trajectory of my life moving forward that would have never happened. And the powerful testimony that you're able to obtain when God walks with you through something, you can't get that by reading a book or going to a class. You have to experience some things in life in order that you can help other people. Mm. You know, I often get the question, why didn't God heal you instantly? I know that God can heal you instantly. And that's true. God can heal people instantly. But one of the things that I learned when I was going through those 6 months is I had said to my husband, since I was a teenage girl at church, we always study one book of the Bible or one lesson of the Bible, but never do we read it from cover to cover, you know, never from Genesis to Revelation and never stop. And I said, if I'm going to go to heaven and I have to stand before, you know, with Jesus at my side, I want to know everything that the scripture has to say to me without hesitation, and I can testify and have knowledge of everything that God wants me to know from this book. So I had started the journey of reading from cover to cover, and the days when I couldn't, when I was throwing up or I was just laying in bed unable to really respond, Tom would come in and he would take my Bible and he would read it to me because he saw where I had marked how much I needed to read that day. And when you're going through chemo, you're so tired and you're so exhausted. The last thing you want to do some days is try to read because you just can't even focus, and your bones hurt so bad. And he would read it for me. So I had finished it from cover to cover. And through that process, I had learned so many things because the Holy Spirit was so close. I mean, even today I read the scriptures and it was never as real and as live as it is when you know the Holy Spirit's in the room with you and he's walking through you. But I remember in 2 Kings, I want to say chapter 20, I'm a little rusty, but 2 Kings chapter 20, Hezekiah, he was a good man and he was a good king. And Isaiah came to, the prophet came to him and said, the Lord has asked me to let you know to prepare your, to prepare yourself because your days are short and you're going to pass away. And King Hezekiah said, Lord, I am a good man. I have done your will. I have been in your will. I have done all that you've ever asked. Please don't take my life from me. And when you read 2 Kings chapter 20, the Lord then sent the prophet back to Hezekiah and said, I'm going to spare your life. I'm going to give you that second chance. I believe he added 15 years onto Hezekiah's life. And during that process, God could have healed Hezekiah, boom, and he could have been healed instantly. But he didn't. When you read the scriptures, he specifically says, go and make a poultice. Now, that's not a word you and I use every
day. No, it isn't. I'm like, ooh, I don't know that word.
What is a poultice? But basically, it's a medicine. So why God chose to use a medicine, why God chose to heal him through that process, only God will know that.
Right.
If he said, you will be healed, but this is how I want to heal you, who are we to second guess that?
Right.
So could God have healed me instantly? He could have. But I believe that the journey that you go through with him, through whatever form of healing that you receive, is for a purpose. And the lessons that I learned during that 6 months in my healing process changed the trajectory of my life. It has been more full. It has been a richer, what I mean by richer, I mean when you look at a newborn child or when you look at a mother and a child together or you appreciate everything in life tenfold. And I wouldn't have had that, right. You know. So when God walks through tough times with you, you will be so much richer. When you hit tough times, don't bail out. Mm. Don't just go, oh, why is God doing this to me? God's not doing that to you. Bad things happen in this world. Bad things happen in life. He doesn't cause it. It happens because there are other forces in this world that we can't see that are active.
Right.
But he will give you the strength and he'll give you the power to walk through it, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And for that, I'm incredibly forever grateful that he did.
So how many years now have you been cancer free?
It has been May 3rd, 2020. It'll be 20 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's amazing.
Yes.
So tell me, let's talk a little bit about your relationship with your husband in the midst of that. There are a lot of strains that can be put on marriages. Nothing like cancer. My mom recently battled cancer, and I saw the toll that it took on, you know, her 20-year marriage. Let's talk about how you guys kept it, because you're still married. You shared earlier that you're still married. How did the cancer affect your relationship? How did you guys hold it together? What are things that you learned in the midst of that with your marriage?
Growing up here at Mason First, I remember a Sunday school teacher who shared with me, you need to have or pray for God to send a man or woman of faith into your life to live the rest of your life with. Mm. When you're a teenager, you're not driven by, you don't have a checklist. You're driven by whether the boy is cute, whether he's, as a matter of fact, I think I ended up coming to the Nazarene church because someone told me all the cute boys went to the Nazarene church, to be honest with you. So that was the qualifying factor for me. But I took the words of that Sunday school teacher very to heart. And I met Tom here, and he was a quiet wallflower. Mm. He was just an adorable quiet wallflower. And we became good friends before we ever started dating. Mm-hmm. And when we finally got engaged, I remember having a song at our wedding that was called When I See Jesus in Your Eyes. Mm. And for me, it had, you know, meaning for the faith that we both grew up with. But until we went through the trial of cancer in 19, when we were both, well, I was 34 and Tom was 36. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what those words meant. Mm. And when you're young and even your early years of marriage, there's a very, you know, romance surrounds all of that. Right. You get up in the morning and you do your hair just because you want to be beautiful for him before he wakes up, you know?
Right.
And you want to make the perfect meal for him and you just want to be all the things that he would want in a wife. Once I had started the chemotherapy and once Tom and I had started down this path of diagnosis and meeting with doctors, his actions were those of a man of faith. Mm. He immediately went to the mat of prayer. Mm. I watched him walk out of the doctor's office and hit his knees in a parking lot before he called the pastor.
Right.
He asked God, what am I supposed to do? Because his heart was breaking, his mind was reeling. And at that time, he was able to dial the phone and say, Pastor Wilkerson.
Right.
And I'm sure he cried for a few minutes before he began talking.
Mm-hmm.
When I started the treatment, I lost all my hair. Mm. There were times when I couldn't stand up in the shower because I was too weak from the drugs that they give you.
Right.
And Tom had to come and help me, you know, and it until you go through it, you don't realize that when you're losing your hair in the shower, it sticks all over you.
Mm.
And then you can see it because you've lost it.
Right.
And it's, you know, then I started crying and I would just melt down and break down in the shower. So Tom had to literally help me. And what I mean by that is you never imagine that the man that you want to be perfect for is going to have to help bathe you, help feed you. Mm. I can remember one night they would give me these shots called Neupogen. And it was a drug that would help you create white blood cells because they would wipe the white blood cells out of you and then they'd get your body to rebuild them. So I had to take Neupogen and Procrit both back then. And it would cause you almost like a skeletal paralysis sometimes. Mm. And your tailbone would just hurt and your teeth would hurt as you're trying to produce these white blood cells. And one night I got up in the middle of the night. My husband's a snorer. Mm. And I could hear him snoring. And I started down the hallway. And it was cold tile in our house in Florida. And I was walking. And all of a sudden, my body just went completely rigid. Mm. And I froze, and I just remember leaning against the wall in the hallway and slumping to the floor and not being able to walk, not being able to crawl. It was like I was paralyzed just sitting there, and it was ice cold tile. Mm. And all I could think of is Tom was snoring when I got out of bed. I should have thought twice before doing that. I thought this is going to be one long night, and it was probably not even a minute. And suddenly I felt these great big warm arms scooping me up and saying, "What are you doing out of bed?" And by then, you know, tears are rolling down my eyes. And he took me back, put me into bed, or helped me, you know, get back into bed when I was done, and tucked me in, made sure I was okay. The next morning, I can remember we needed to go to the doctor, and I stood before the mirror. And I was down to 112 pounds, which I'm over 5'6". And a big boned person, so I was like a skeleton with skin on. No hair, no eyebrows, no eyelashes. Mm-hmm. I kept thinking I looked like an alien in the mirror. And it was then that I remembered the night before when Tom picked me up, carried me back to bed. Mm-hmm. There's nothing romantic about that, you know what I mean? There's no beautiful, you know, evening out with roses and all that. It was the song that we had in our wedding. And I kept thinking, when I see Jesus in your eyes. Mm. And Tom was Jesus to me. Jesus and the Holy Spirit walked with me. But Tom were the hands and feet of Christ.
Right. Yeah.
And he was my, you know, the man to get me through that.
That's really...
I could blow my nose.
I know. So I want you to share, there were some big changes for you after you were healed and you came out and you were cancer free. How did you said that you went through a lot of perspective changes, things you felt like you had a new lease on life because there, you know, in the hospital, you're told, nope, you're... only got a couple months to live. Now you have this treatment. 6 months later, you're totally cured. What did you do different? How did you proceed in your life from that point differently?
When we got that news, Tom and I immediately went home and I said, Tom, if we don't know how long I have left, because of course, when they put you, when you're in remission and they don't know how long you're going to stay in remission, you have to make a lot of decisions really fast. Mm. And I said, we need to sell the house. And I want to move back home. Hmm. I said, Tom, if I'm going to go, because we talked about the horrible things that you don't like to talk about in life, like where do you want to be buried?
Right.
And you're only 34, so you'd never thought of all those things. And I said, well, Tom, if something happens and I ever relapsed, I want to be buried in Michigan. And if I have to be buried in, or if I'm going to be buried in Michigan, I want to go back on my own. I'm not going back in a pine wood box on an airplane.
Right, right.
And he said, okay, but how fast can we sell this house, Cindy? Mm. And at that time, I had been in real estate law. I worked for a law firm, so I was used to all the procedures. And I said, Tom, I'll sell it myself if I have to, because we had gone through our savings account while we were going through this process. And so we put the sign in the front yard, and within 24 hours, we had a call.
Wow.
And within that week, we had sold our house for more than we had purchased it for. And so we moved back to Michigan. I did skip a little bit of the whole process. But we ended up back in Michigan by that December.
Wow.
So May 3rd, I was put into, I was in remission. And then we sold our house, but I had another CAT scan that was due, and we didn't want to mess up our insurance, so we had stayed in our mother and father-in-law's camper in Lion Country Safari in Florida until we could move back that November, December. So when we came back, I was so happy to be with family. When you're 34 and you're in your 20s, you want to spread your wings and see the world and go out and do things and not be under mom and dad's thumb anymore, right?
Right.
And the only thing I could think of after going through everything is I wanted to be back home with my mom and dad. They were getting older, and I think the time you get to spend with your parents here on earth is just as precious as when you have children, because they need you during those years. There's so much that goes on in their lives that you grow from being a part of their lives when they are seniors and older. So we came back, and we were with, we lived with my mom and dad for a year till we could get back on our feet. And then we built a house, and I had started substitute teaching, but because I didn't have an immune system, I could catch everything all over again. So, you know, the childhood diseases right. that someone might get, I'm exposing myself with all of the students that would be in my classroom.
Yeah.
So I started working in the insurance industry. I immediately began to have opportunities that helped me to advance quite quickly. And once I learned the trade as an insurance broker, and I was able to become successful within that trade, I started my own company with Brian Daly from Chicago. We began, we put together Highland Risk Services. So it was, Brian had already started down that path with Highland, and then I had looked at starting my own company. I scrapped that idea and joined Brian in building Highland Risk Services. And so the business grew quite quickly, and it was a great success. And if you would have asked me when I was younger, would I have ever made six figures? I would have told you no. I never thought that was a, you know.
Yeah.
But I found successful a success, and I enjoyed building business. And I got to meet a lot of neat people through that process. And then Tom and I also had moments where I had to think about, what if, we were able to get things paid off, you know, in our life. And we were in a little bit of a financial independence. And we were sitting in church on one Sunday, and Kyle Thompson came to speak. And Kyle had mentioned how he had given his skill set, what he had done in life, over to God and allowed God to use him and any others who wanted to do what he did to build the kingdom of God. And I thought to myself, I've always been in business and finance. How can I do that? I'm not a preacher. I've been in the ministry since I was a teenage girl. I think Tom and I have taught every class possible, from teens to children to senior adults to, you know, we'd experienced all that. But I thought, how can I use my business skills? And the more Kyle spoke that morning, Tom looked at me and tears are streaming down my eyes. And he said, I know that you've always wanted to go into the ministry. If that's something you want to do, life's short, do it. And I said, are you serious? You're okay if I just walk away from my career path and work at the church? You know, the church doesn't pay a lot, Tom. And he goes, I know, I've been on enough church boards to know that we basically pay gas money, right? And I said, Tom, are you okay? This is going to change our lives. I mean, Tom's a teacher. Teachers, they, you know, you watch the news. Teachers don't make huge salaries. So we would have to make some large adjustments in our life. Tom said, you need to do this because I know what you've been through. And if God's called you to do this, well, I thought that we made this decision, but where would I serve?
Right.
Mason First Church had built The Rock out on Dansville Road. And the building is a fabulous building. And it was built with the faith and the monies that people who went before me and went before you, that are all on the wall behind you and me, who've moved on to heaven, they put their dollars, their heart, and their faith into building that building. Mm-hmm. Now, what do we do with it in order to make it effective in ministry? Right. It was the question. Mm-hmm. So the church board at Mason First Church of the Nazarene had decided that they wanted to hire someone who would help to develop it.
Hmm.
And that's where the opportunity came for me.
Wow.
And so I applied for the, it's a part-time position here at Mason First Church. And at the time, when I came on board, we were looking at how much it costs to be out there on Dansville Road, mm-hmm. just utilities, et cetera, and how much of that load is shared by the folks, the church body here at Mason First Church.
Right.
And there were a lot of areas where we were placing, we were investing dollars that we could change that around and create it so that we could bring all of our business here locally into Mason.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if children need t-shirts, if they need football jerseys or basketball jerseys,
right.
whatever it may be, buy them here locally and don't send our dollars out to California to be a part of a prepackaged program, which
right.
is what we were using at the time. A wonderful program, but
right.
prepackaged nonetheless.
Right.
And if we could move it in here locally. So we looked at all these opportunities that we had, and that's where I was able to use my skill set.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's been wonderful just because I now see families out at the Rock. The coolest thing is when we started Connect Sports, the other program was one where only one church could be a part of that program. When we started Connect Sports, we created our own program. So now we have, Mason Community Church is a part of it. Eden United Brethren Church is a part
right.
of it. We have all of these churches who partner with us in Connect Sports.
Right.
So if you're a child or a family who move here from Cleveland, Ohio, and you might be a Baptist, you might be Eden United Brethren. When you come to our football field or our basketball court, and we get to know who you are, we can connect you with a church family who will love on you and help give you direction and fellowship and friendships and so on and so forth. And it all happens out at the Rock.
Mm-hmm.
It may have been built by the Nazarene Church, but the faith and the folks out there is almost, I would say, a united body of believers from every denomination that's
cool.
here in Mason,
that's
which
cool.
to me makes me so excited because that's the whole purpose of community.
It was never meant to be a one church, one body. It was meant to be a community. And with your skill set, you've allowed it to open up to those possibilities and include a lot more people. So that's really great. That's really cool.
And there's nothing more rewarding to me to know that I made the right decision than when I'm out on a football field like last fall. Tom and I took on coaching one of the teams, and one young man, and I'll just use his first name to protect him, but his name was Lucas. He sent Tom and I a card at Christmas.
Aww.
Prior to me getting the mail, my husband kept saying, "Cindy, what do you want for Christmas? What do you want?" You know, every husband asks that. What do you?
Right.
And I always said, "Tom, I don't need anything for Christmas." And he said, "What do you want for Christmas?" And then I opened the mail and I went into the other room where Tom was, and tears are streaming down my face. And I said, "Tom, I'm sorry to tell you, there is absolutely nothing that you can give me that's going to top this present."
Aww.
And he said, "What is that?" And he took the card, and it was addressed to Coach and Mrs. Ritchie.
Aww.
And in it, Lucas had said to me, or said to Tom and I, he wrote to Tom and I in his handwriting, which is just precious. And he said, "Thank you for sharing Jesus with me." That to me, that was the greatest reward of any decision that I could have made. It's worth more than any advancement or promotion at work or corporate anything. That to me, because that's an investment in eternity. Whenever we invest in a child, whenever you give them something to hold on to, when you help them to encourage them, to get them to believe in who they are, then not only do they grow up to be a more confident person, but they also will eventually begin to turn that gift that you've given them back into helping other kids.
Right.
When they become adults,
right,
they want to do the same thing that you did.
Right.
To be able to help families who are going through crisis situations, all of that is just so incredibly rewarding. Mm. If we have a child who comes to the Learning Center and there's a need, the beautiful thing of it is they may have come there for tutoring to mm-hmm. learn math or English.
Right.
But if we notice that there's a need, a coat, if they need books, if they need whatever it is they need, we have a body of believers here at Mason First Church, and many of them have stopped into my office to say, we don't want our name shared, but I just want to know if there's ever a need, come see me.
Oh, wow.
You know, God has blessed them mm-hmm. in such a way financially where they want to help others, but they don't know where the needs are.
Right.
And so a lot of times I get to play Santa Claus, so to speak, you know, and that's pretty cool too. And being able to do that through the Rock, a lot of folks come to the Rock that are part of the community that may not belong to a church body, but they need to know that there's a church body that loves them
right.
and that there's a church body that wants to help them mm-hmm. and provide for them if needed and share Christ with them.
Yeah.
And that to me is priceless.
Mm-hmm. It's so great that you, the common theme that I have recognized as we've been talking is community, that you in many different ways in your life have been able to experience God's people showing up for you mm-hmm. and then allowing God's people to show up for other people that you're in contact with. And I think that's an interesting thread that kind of runs mm-hmm. through your story is that you are, we've kind of joked about this earlier today, you're type A, you're very driven. Obviously, you built an amazing company, but when it was time, you and your husband both knew that ministry was supposed to be where you're at, but that God used community in so many different ways to bless you and to encourage you and to raise you up into the ministry leader that you are right now, which I think is, I wouldn't have necessarily thought that that was going to come out of this conversation when we started. So that's why I find that really interesting. One kind of last thing, what would you say to someone that may be going through a cancer diagnosis right now? What did you need to hear? What were things that you heard or you experienced that were encouraging to you?
Mm. That's a broad question. I'm going to cover that with two answers.
Sure.
The first one is if you experience any type of diagnosis, don't walk through it alone. Mm. There's a church, a body of believers that have the Holy Spirit within them to teach you. If you're not a believer, I guess what I'm saying, if you're not a believer, find someone who can help you walk down that path.
Mm-hmm.
You need the strength that the Holy Spirit can give you, and a body of believers can support you, whether it needs to be someone who sits with you while your spouse goes grocery shopping, or if you don't have a spouse, that they can go grocery shopping for you.
Mm-hmm.
They want to love on you. And that is for the folks who may not attend a church. Now, for folks who attend a church, you and I were talking earlier about how there's some people who want to help and they want to share stories with you.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't realize they're lost for words because it's uncomfortable for them because
right.
they know you're facing a situation. And so sometimes they will share a story with you and they'll say, oh, I heard you were diagnosed with stage 4 Hodgkin's lymphoma. I had an aunt that was diagnosed with that. And I said, oh, you did? And they'd go, oh, yeah, but, you know, she was like in her 40s and she passed away. She never made it. And you go, no, you did not just share that with
right,
me.
Right.
You know, is that supposed to encourage me? Because you go home and you're like, oh, no, I just want to hear one story of someone who survived.
Right, exactly.
You know?
That's right. Yeah.
And so as much as I know it makes some folks uncomfortable, don't share stories with bad endings.
Right. That's right. That's right.
I would say one of the cool things was a woman that reached out to me. She was a stage 4 breast cancer survivor.
Mm.
She shared with me her story, and I can tell you that I hung on her every word. Her name, her first name was Dawn, and Dawn had 3 children. And Dawn would tell me, you know what? Yep, you're going to throw up. Yep, this is going to be miserable for you. Yep, you're going to go through this. But when it's all done, guess what? I'm going skiing in Colorado. And I just want you to know that you'll be skiing in Colorado. You know what I mean? She painted this picture of this is a really uncomfortable time in life. And you got to go through it. And it, you know, you just got to walk through it. And I'm here for you. Call me and cry on the phone if you just want to cry. But we're going to get through this. And she said, but I just want to tell you what happened at work today, because when I was going through it, what you're going through, I didn't get to work. Could you imagine trying to work in your state? And she would like make some jokes I won't share on air. But she would also say to me, but you know what? Now I get to go here and I'm going there and you will be too.
Right.
You need to share visions of hope with people. So if you... Most people who are cancer survivors, they know how important it is to share their story with others.
Right.
Because others need to have that hope to hold on to when they're going through all of the misery.
Right.
And just be a light for people. So as much as I know folks get uncomfortable and they want to share stories, if it's a story that doesn't end well, wait till the person is through everything before you share that with them. Or maybe just smile and say, I'm praying for you is the most, and that's the best answer I could give. Because when people said to me they were praying for me, that was priceless because I knew prayer worked.
Right.
In Tom's and my short experiences as a young couple, newly married, living out on our own, I have had over and over again times of God's faithfulness that has shown and been revealed to us in our young years that was a bit of letting me know that if he did it then, he'll do it again. There's a pattern of faithfulness. If we are faithful to him, he'll be faithful to us when we walk through it. One of the things that you mentioned earlier, and I'm going to share, is it always bothered me when you would hear pastors say, if you send money to whatever, and then you'll be blessed tenfold. And as a young person, I would hear that and I would go, really? I'm not sure I... But you know what? One of the cool things that God did, and he has revealed himself time and again, Tom and I were in our 30s, like I said, and we were most of the time paycheck to paycheck because we both put ourselves through college, through university. It was 6 months of working, saving, and then you're writing a check to Florida Atlantic University, and there it goes. You know, it was gone in an instant. And we had a house, but, you know, we actually had to build that house almost because we bought it. It was in pretty bad shape. When we were going through our savings account, when I was going through treatment, our refrigerator quit working. Now, by now, we're on one income.
Right.
And Tom's handling all of the bills on his own, you know, footing the bills. And my mom and dad lived with us for 3 months, so they would buy groceries. And our refrigerator died. And I can remember looking for the on the internet to try and find out how much a refrigerator cost. I found the price, and I told Tom... He hadn't gotten his next paycheck yet, so we're like, how are we going to pay for this refrigerator? And I grew up very prideful. I didn't want to ask mom and dad for the money, even though they probably would have given it. They would have written a check in a heartbeat, you know? But that evening, no one knowing what happened to our refrigerator whatsoever, our pastor stopped over and he said, how are you kids doing? And he shared with us that that evening that our church of probably on a Wednesday night might have been 30 people tops. They had taken a love offering for Tom and I. That love offering. Now, I don't believe in coincidences, Heather. That love offering was within $1. And it was like odd change. $1 of the price of the refrigerator. Now, the only person I had shared with that with was Tom. You know, and I can remember when we lived in Florida, there were times when Tom had, he was always wanting to help some of the widows in our church. Like if there was a, woman in our church who was raising children, she lived in a mobile home and her toilet literally fell through the bottom of her trailer one time. I mean, it was just an older, Tom went over and he restructured it. He fixed it for her. And there was another, Ruth Buter who had Tom go in and redo her entire bathroom for her, like a shower and everything for her, and Tom did it because we're commanded to help each other in the body of Christ. We never asked for, he just did it to love people. I just can remember when things would come up, there are people who would walk up and just help us in ways that we never expected in that same fashion. And to me, God placed on their hearts a need.
Yep.
They didn't know what the need was. But you can't tell me it's a coincidence when needs are within a dollar.
Right, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? 30 people, you know, for 30 people to come together and put enough money that was the price of a refrigerator that was within a dollar of the refrigerator is, yeah.
Well, and I think, too, during those times, because I've had that situation, not with cancer, but with difficult times where you're kind of like, you wake up in the morning, you're like, okay, I don't know how I'm going to take care of this, God.
Yes.
And then something comes in the mail and you're like, okay, God, I know you're listening. Because during those really tough times when you're struggling or when you're sick or going through a tough time, you wonder sometimes, where is God?
Yes.
Where is he? And then you're like, oh, and now my refrigerator broke.
Right.
Okay, great. That's awesome, God. Thank you so much. Let's look at how much. And then all of a sudden that money shows up without you ever telling anyone. You're like, okay, God, I know that you hear me. I know that you're here. I know that you're with me in this, because no one would have known how much that refrigerator was except for you and God and Tom. So I think that's an encouragement that even when we feel alone during difficult times, there have been times I've been like, God, will you just show up? I don't know how you're going to show up, but you just show up. And then he does. And you know that he hasn't left you and hasn't forsaken you. And I'm sure those moments for you were like, okay, God, I can feel you're still in this with me. You're meeting our needs and you're taking care of us through our community. So it is. It's great to share those stories, because I know that for people that are going through maybe not cancer, but maybe just a difficult time, to remember that God knows all of that and he's not left you or forsaken you. Thank you so much for sharing your story. And thank you for just sharing how God moved during that time and how God showed up for you guys. And I just really appreciate your open and honest sharing today.
Thank you, Heather. It's my pleasure to be here.
Good.
Thank you.